Yet, it is this world that is opposed to Christ on principle. It does not believe that human progress in this world can serve man's true happiness. Where the operative verb is serve man's true happiness, it holds that such progress is man's happiness. This world thrives on adaptation, but in reverse. It uses the developments of science not to help man, but to destroy him spiritually. It uses the discoveries of human genius not to assist man in his moral life, to greater peace among men and greater love of God, but to incite conflict among men and to alienate them from God. It uses the marvels of the social communications not to strengthen the bonds of faith in Christian community, but to mobilize power in the hands of a few who then manipulate their fellow men as puppets to do their master's bidding, while drugging their victims into insensibility by appealing to, and this is in the Catholic Church, appealing to co-responsibility, shared responsibility, new morality, freedom from male tyranny, and the need for being relevant to the modern age. There are many implications for the believing Catholic that follow. Now, the least of these is great prudence, not in the popular sense of mere caution, but in the biblical sense of being, in Christ's language, as simple as doves and as wise as serpents, which for me is one of the most practical passages in Revelation. Mere simplicity cannot survive in today's world. It must be simplicity joined with extraordinary shrewdness. Simplicity then is not enough in dealing with this world, about which Christ made that awful statement, "I pray not for the world." What he meant was that he does not, because he cannot, pray for the success of evil or the advancement of sin. We hear a great deal nowadays, and rightly, about the need for reconciliation. But let us not be deceived. It would not be reconciliation to reconcile ourselves to the world which faith tells us is opposed on principle to Christ. It would be betrayal. And the betrayal is unfortunately all too easy, because so many people are deceived by the appearance of evil under the guise of good. All temptation is evil under the guise of good. That's why people are seduced. Let us be specific. The exercise of ecclesiastical authority in the past had not infrequently been unfeeling, unkind, and sometimes unjust. It was good to correct these abuses and make the church's leaders more responsible to Christ's injunction that bishops in dioceses and superiors in religious communities be humble in their use of authority and not lord it over those whose faith alone sustains their obedience. But what happens? A new theory of speculative theology is now widely current, which claims that no one, with stress on the one person in the church's structure, has the right to command obedience. Instead of bishops holding a divine right to govern in Christ's name, priest organizations under a variety of beguiling names, council for this and council for that, are the actual governing body, and the bishop is only a spokesman for the priests. They decide, not he. And in one constitution of religious communities after another, I've seen them, I have them, they cover a shelf and a half in my bookcase. Many of them say openly, the authority in the community is vested in the consensus of the community. No doubt, much of this inversion of Roman Catholic ecclesiology is still largely in written books, but much of it has already penetrated into the life of the church. The seeds of invasion of episcopal authority in the dioceses and of superior's authority in communities, the seeds of invasion have been sown, and the harvest of bad fruit is already being reaped in more than one part of the Church of God. When sisters in religious communities that are on open placement have got to be sent a bill by their superiors reminding them that their tax to the community is overdue, in much the same way situation ethics has intruded itself into the Catholic Church. Remember, we're talking about this world, right? The world of malice, pride, sin, but disguised. It's always disguised. So herein, what is called situation ethics, too often in the past, the objective principle of Christian morality was applied in a wooden and un-Christ-like fashion. Norms of conduct prescribed by the church were sometimes treated as though mercy and charity were not also and primary moral norms. There was a crying need for reform, And the Second Vatican Council made it clear that the much-needed Reformation was on the way. But again, what happened? At first, more covertly, and by now openly, many formerly respected spokesmen for the Church's morality and canon law are telling the faithful that the whole body of moral legislation is not only outmoded but obsolete, including and with stress the commandments of God. Not a single precept of the Gospels. These are learned books published under Catholic auspices. It is said, is any longer preceptive, not even the sanctity of human life. Moral theologians, one that I know personally, teaching in a Catholic seminary, approves abortion. The new norm of the new morality is the behavioral pattern of civil society. Surely, they argue, the Church does not want to be out of step with what is obviously a contraceptive, abortive, extramaritally sexual, maritally unstable, and compulsively permissive American culture. I still have an epilogue. Before I give it, let me remind you of the importance of knowing both levels or types of this world. On the one hand, what we are sacrificing. On the other, what we should pray for. Now the epilogue. Against the background of these reflections, it may seem pointless to still talk about holiness or growth in Christian perfection. In other words, what has all of this got to do with becoming holy? It is the highest wisdom to encourage ourselves to above average practice of virtue, which is another definition for holiness. Why so? Because holiness does many things, but for our purpose it clarifies the mind. As the Beatitude tells us, how happy are the pure of heart, that is, the holy of heart, they shall see God. Concretely, this means that the more holy we are in spirit, the more clear thinking we shall be in mind. Holy people may not be geniuses, but they are all clear-headed. We shall be, as no one else, able to recognize truth and distinguish it from error on both levels of both worlds, relative to the world as God's creation. Clear in recognizing what of this world is to be used and what of this world is to be given up. and regarding the other, the world of sin, clear-headed in being able to distinguish the shell from what's inside, to be able to penetrate behind the beguiling and often very highly placed and sophisticated language and see that beneath is sin. We shall be able to see the will of God because our souls are united with the mind of God. We shall be strong to resist the seduction of sin because we are convinced, not from books, but from the Spirit who dwells in our hearts, that this world is like a shadow that passes away, and that only one thing matters in this life, to be for eternity in the friendship of God. Thank you for listening.